It's Arcadataology.
Arca-hula-what-a-gy?
Right. Arcadataology. Data before it knew it was data.
Ah, what do you got?
I got Stonehenge.
The rocks.
Yeah, the rocks. Or as we might call them, predictive analytics.
I didn't predict you'd go there.
Well, Stonehenge has been predicting the seasons for at least 4,000 years.
That's staying power. What does it do?
Well, whole bunch of stuff. But it actually started as a cremation site or cemetery. At some point, somebody noticed that the sun didn't rise in the same spot every day, but that it did rise in the same place periodically.
Like the solstices.
Precisely. Stand in the center, and the sun rises right over the heelstone at the summer solstice. A similar alignment in the opposite direction at sunset on the winter solstice.
That's not decoration or a monument. That is forecasting. We can't even get tomorrow will be sunny. Most of the time.
But it is important to know the seasonal turning points. When to plant, when to prepare for the harvest, and when winter is coming back to try to kill everyone.
I had a budget meeting like that once. So instead of a dashboard or some guy on TV, they waited for the sun to line up with a rock.
Right. Zero latency, and also very hard to ignore. It's thought that thousands of people would gather for these solstice events. Full executive visibility.
And documentation.
Oral tradition and ritual. Most wouldn't have known why, but they could read the report, especially on the big days.
And haven't helped the architect if the sun didn't rise where they thought it was.
Brutal governance. But then again, this report was write once, read many. Updates were very, very difficult. They had to get it right to stand the test of time.
So what you're saying is that Stonehenge was a predictive model robust enough to survive four millennia of drift, while most modern analytic systems didn't survive a reorg.
That's it.
I hadn't thought about it quite that way before.
Well, now you have.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
When it comes to ancient data-related artifacts, there's Mark and John. No, what I really mean is Stonehenge is probably the most well-known.
Well, there are a lot of theories about its construction and its use, but not much is known with certainty.
And they didn't leave a manual with schematics and diagrams.
No, but just like a good report, Stonehenge is largely self-describing. The sun shows up over this rock on this day, and next year it'll do the same.
Yeah, but without some metadata, we're probably not getting the full value out of it.
Probably not, but I can't imagine anything that we're producing today surviving 4,000 years, or even 400. There's some applications that I wrote almost 40 years ago that are still running. Not sure for how much longer, though.
I think I have a few of those, too.
So who's on today?
In this episode, we start our conversation with Tony Massarella. I should say Dr. Tony Massarella. He talks a lot about CDOs, leadership, and adaptive learning.
Sounds interesting. Let's get started.
I'm doing this monologue after finishing up the Data Leaders Summit in Wexford, Ireland. During the conference, I had a small epiphany. As much as I want to, I can't avoid AI in any discussions during this podcast. But it's not the hard stuff that we're talking about. It's data quality, data governance, and things like that. But that's the simple stuff. We're missing the hard stuff. And without that, we're looking at three kinds of AI: the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, you know, the transformative stuff. AI adds value. The bad, party tricks, fraud, doing bad pictures online, replacing coders and chopping headcount without looking at the consequences. And the ugly part, the unintended consequences of deep learning and agentic AI, which is usurping human thinking, and AI has its own agenda. So getting past the basics now, data quality, data governance, there's some things we also need to work on. Organization leaderships need to own and be accountable for bad consequences of AI. Strategies need to shift into data strategies being business strategies, and agent ready and operational things versus analytics and business intelligence things. Data architectures are becoming business architectures. Data governance is moving upstream. It's no longer data governance, it's corporate governance. Data teams are becoming orchestration teams. Forget a career in data engineering. That's ho-hum now. Corporate signals are that data strategy is changing all the time. So be flexible right now. Be on your toes. All levels of companies, all levels of organizations. A lot of standard things are changing. A lot of priorities are changing. Oh, and be nice to each other, especially before you say yes to another AI experiment. It is our privilege today here on the Rock Bottom Data Feed to have Tony Mazzarella, a vice president, data management, data governance at a global financial services company, a really smart guy. So there's two PhDs on the call today and one idiot in front of a microphone. We are going to talk about corporate stuff and high level stuff and this the business view of data, as our whole season is going to be dealing with that here on the Rock Bottom Data Feed. But Tony, welcome to Rock Bottom.
Happy to be here, John. It's a pleasure.
Let's start this conversation. We're not going to talk techie today. We're going to be societal, managerial. I'm going to punch way over my weight. All right. But we'll just see how this goes here.
Yep. So I wanted to start, Tony, with a quote of yours I saw recently saying that data governance is a socio-technical coordination system, not a static control layer, and it's distinct from the data management function. Therefore, ideas, capabilities, and metrics for resilient data and AI governance should be reimagined as an adaptive learning system, not as a fixed compliance framework. That is a mouthful.
I've never said anything.
That's a doozy, huh?
I've never said anything that intelligent in my life.
So I think we all understand data governance as a static control layer. I think that's fine. But how is data governance distinct then from data management function? And what is a socio-technical coordination system?
Yeah. So Mark, you know, we could, that's me flexing some PhD muscle there, right? I mean, that is almost verbatim out of the dissertation. You gotta sound intelligent. So they give you the,
I know it when I see it.
Yeah. let's unpack that a little bit, right? Because there's a lot of theory in there, and I think that's an underlying theme in data governance. And when you dig into the research, is it's not always a great fit for academia because it's so multidimensional. And so let's talk about the socio-technical piece for a minute, right? So there used to be a predominant in information system design theory on, you know, developing socio-technical systems, right? We use technology to do things in the real world, to make life better, to improve processes, to execute things. And so the principles of socio-technical design are, you know, along the lines of, you know, understanding what you're building, what people are going to do with it, what problem it's solving in the real world. Right? Connecting the dots between the technology and society, right? In this context, right, we're using that idea in saying, you know, organizations are social systems, right? The systems that we have in place for managing performance, the values that we declare as a leadership team, right? Our commitments to our customers, right, our obligations and communications to shareholders, right? These are all part of a complex social system. And then within that, we have, you know, subsystems, subcultures, we have norms and behaviors, and then we have technology and the data, right? And this sort of is all intertwined in the nature of data being what, you know, if we're being fancy academics, we say data is semiotic, right? Semiotics being we represent things. And then you take that idea that data represents things in the real world, and you get into, right, I'm sure everyone with all the AI stuff and modern developments is talking about semantic layers. We have this idea of semantics, right, and how we're representing things. And we need to understand that data is designed, a database is designed by humans that have a unique perception of the world. And so when we are taking all of these systems that were designed at a business process level, at an information system level, and we're doing analytics and we're moving data downstream to do different things, right? And we're going across, we're violating the existing social structures, the management hierarchies for decision making, all the way up through the organization, right? The idea in that statement on it being socio-technical is we need to understand all of these factors, right? Not just from a technology perspective, not from that IT mindset, right? And not even from a more technical system in terms of process integration, right? But understanding the broader social system, right? We're really calling out that there is a technical component and a social component to the ideas of data governance and the problems that we're trying to solve. Sorry, that was a bit wordy, but
awesome.
Yeah, we're decomposing this.
Well, which leads right to the next question, though. So why would a CEO care?
I don't think that I would ever go into a CEO to talk about it that way, right? But what I do say when I talk to business executives is that, you know, we need to focus on the social systems, this murky idea of culture, right? And we talk about data culture a lot. I don't know that we're consistent in what we mean. I do an exercise when I'm speaking to a business audience at a conference, right? I have an exercise that I like to do, right? Everybody raise your hands if your company has stated values, right? And everybody raise their hand. Then I say, okay, now do your senior leaders in your organization embody those values consistently in the decisions they make, in the way that they communicate, and the way that, you know, they carry themselves? Some hands drop. Third question is, do all of the systems, and just to preface this for the listeners, when I say systems, I'm not talking about like Workday or, right? I'm talking about social systems, right? Do your systems, like how you establish performance objectives, how you make decisions, how your organization is designed, do they align to the stated values of your organization? And there's very few hands left after that question, right? And now I'm not knocking business executives. That's a very, very difficult ship to steer, right? And, you know, it's very easy, relatively speaking, to change the values by which your company is being operated and led. And I mean, and that happens very often with transitions in leadership. It's a much different thing to take the thousands of people, the thousands, hundreds of thousands of systems, and all of the data and everything else that goes along with it, and shift it in that direction, right? And that to me is a fundamental challenge here. And so when I'm talking to leadership in that context, we're talking really about organizational change management, right? But with a bit more understanding of, you know, beyond the textbook, we need to understand that there are people operating in this system just trying to do their job.
So then let's finish unpacking here. So you talk about data governance being an adaptive learning system, not a compliance framework. And I think we can, you know, again, all relate to compliance framework. So what is adaptively learning, and what are these new ideas, capabilities, and metrics that we should be looking at?
Yeah. So, you know, organizations learn, right? They learn differently than human beings, right? But there's an element of we're solving problems, or we tried something and it didn't work, or we tried something and it worked really well, and hey, let's do that again, right? And what we discovered in the research is that, you know, these ideas of sustainability and resilience were really tied to these social factors and, you know, the communication awareness of data governance had implications on perceptions of value. And so what we're really saying here is, you know, data governance is solving a lofty challenge in that, you know, what we call the socio-technical challenge, right? And we're trying to manage data consistently by, you know, working across these rigid organizational structures that need to exist, right? They're tried and true ways to operate an organization. And so within that conflict, overcoming it is inherently collaboration, right? And decision making about data towards those objectives. And data governance can be really effective, as shown by who perceived value in our study, by creating an environment where there is that collaboration and organizations start to learn, right? We make better decisions. Our data management capability is more effective, right, if we are making consistent decisions that are resulting in positive outcomes time and time again. And so data governance really should be thought of as a mechanism of enabling that. And so when we're talking about measuring the performance of data governance, which is a challenge for everybody, right? And, you know, you guys have covered it on your podcast in the past around data as an asset. And, you know, is it something that should be on the balance sheet? And, you know, that might work for some, but it's really, really hard to get there, right? And takes a lot of commitment. And so can we look at measuring the effectiveness of data governance, and we're able to make the right decision faster and more consistently, right, in different contexts, right, across different stakeholders in the organization, right, and being able to maintain and persist that knowledge, right, which brings us into something else that you know is another area of interest, which is the sustainability and resilience of data governance programs through these changes.
So who do you see taking those measurements or maintaining them, communicating them, and what are those measures, and how do you get folks to cooperate with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer that you need a non-data communication specialist in the data office. I think that is the most effective way, right? We ask a lot of data governance professionals, right? We need to be technical. We need to understand the regulatory landscape. We need to understand, you know, change management, communications. There's so much that we're tasked with that it's difficult to be really good at any one thing. And I think that we found that perceptions of value coincided with having accountability for the communications, right, relative to the challenges of awareness and knowledge about data governance.
Now, that is a bunch of good background, good understanding of why we have the challenges and why governing of data is hard while organizations in their other systems,
right,
like you mentioned, HR, there's governance there too. There's oversight of processes. Yes. There's oversight of output. But then we get into oversight of data and everyone goes deer in the headlights. Okay.
Yeah.
So So there's some understanding here. So my question then is, when you put something new like that in an organization, you want leadership to be supportive and be understanding and be able to manage that, make the decisions. I don't see, and this is a question for you. I mean, I have my answer to this question, but I'm asking your view of it. I don't think leadership is smart enough in terms of knowing enough. It's not that leaders aren't smart.
Right.
But they don't know enough about this. So don't they just need to sit down and kind of go to class on this stuff? That this is, in our time of history, something that a CEO and a board need to get smarter about and learn, and they don't have enough in their head to help guide and operate the organization through this?
I do, John, but I think thus far we've been going about it the wrong way, right? And I think it's easy to get caught up on, okay, we're talking about a corporate governance function, capability, however you want to frame it, right? And yeah, why as a data governance leader am I getting asked, what is my impact on the top line, you know, metrics, performance metrics for the company, but you're not really tasking HR with that, right? I think we just need to accept that that is the case and say, okay, we do need to educate our leaders, but we need to stop talking in broad strokes and vagaries. I think, I always joke with, we're meeting with the C-level folks, grab the paper and crayons, right? We need to be very simplistic. We need to be more prescriptive in what exactly we need to have, what needs to happen and why, and how we're going to enact the change. I think part of the problem and why I was so adamant about pursuing more formal research in this space, and that's something that, John, I know you agree, like we need more rigorous academic peer-reviewed knowledge in this discipline. I think that hurts us because we can't really go to leaders, you know, our CEO or our board with empirically evidenced, hey, if you do this, right, this is going to be the impact. And so I think we need more of that. But I mean, to bring it back down to, you know, what do we need to be doing and thinking about today?
So I'll ask the follow-on question.
Sure.
So I get all this. So we need to make there has to be some education. So bringing it down to the practical part, as you stated.
Right.
Three things. If I'm going to do a class, I've got them for 30 minutes, which is a lot of time for a CEO and a board. When they leave the room, what are the three things I want them to have in their head that they don't have in their head now?
If I had to boil it down to three, right, it would be really, what is the purpose of data governance? What do we mean by data governance? And that goes back to, I view it as a cultural system, not a control system, right? Every organization, whether or not they have formal data governance, and most now do, right, has norms around who can touch the data, what numbers count, what is important, right? The implementation of formal data governance, which can be problematic, needs to align with the existing norms, or it is going to be ignored, right? We need to understand the organization, right? Within that, when we're talking about the roles of data governance, right, we need to explain to leadership that data roles are social roles before their job titles, right? But stewards, data owners, right? Those are nice and neat on paper. But in practice, as we know, right, authority follows reputation, tenure, political capital, all of these social factors in the organization. And I think, you know, I don't think that has been explained to leaders. I think they're thinking, we need these, to get these people in place, go find them. And if the structures are in place, then the machine is going to do its thing. And they're not thinking about it the right way. We're not explaining it to them in that way, right? It's also how we measure and view progress. So point number two would be, right, data quality metrics and data quality issues are not defects, they're signals, right? If we apply an anthropological lens to this, right, bad data isn't always negligence. It's not my people are doing something wrong, right? And the challenges in managing and remediating data quality, which is really my passion and why I get up in the morning, right? There's conflicting incentives between teams, right? If I'm on a product team trying to deliver data products on the analytics side, right? But I am, and I've taken that data, it's in a warehouse, and now there's a new requirement, and I realize that the data that I'm getting from that system of record does not meet my requirements. Well, we have to go tell someone that has their own priorities for the year, their own budget, to prioritize our work for the greater good. Do we have performance incentives in place to enable that? Do we have a pathway to get those things done? These are the systems that are often not built in with establishing a data governance program.
So how do you get those priorities aligned? Because I've seen over and over at company after company, right, exactly the scenario you described. There's an issue with the data. There's something needs to change with the data. Take it back to the development group. They say, submit a ticket and we'll get back to it. Never, you know, because product is flowing, money's moving, everything is good. I'm on to the next project. And you're coming and telling me something about the data that apparently isn't impacting my real users. This is, you know, something extra. So how have you seen that be successfully prioritized?
Trust and building a culture of collaboration in those instances is really important. And I think how you go about facilitating that issue management and remediation process is really, really critical. To be perfectly honest, I've not once perfected it at scale in my career, but there have been successes, and where there have been successes, you can clearly attribute that the business impact of that issue as it aligns to the value that you're trying to generate from that data or the risk associated with it, right? What are the money out scenarios associated to this bad thing that will or could happen to the data? And then you build a business case, you do a cost benefit analysis. And that's where having those collaborative data governance structures and escalation paths in place can help solve the problem. Because the frontline and middle managers that are going to have that initial reaction like, oh my goodness, if I stop my machine to go fix this thing, then I'm not going to hit my performance goal, right? They're coming from, that's fear, and that's valid fear. But if they know that this has gone through discussions and collaboration across their department heads, and there is commitment to doing this, and there might be some impact, or they're providing additional resources, we've overcome that challenge. I think that's how you proceed. And I think over time, organizations, back to the organizational learning piece, can say, hey, that went really well. Now, within that, what were the challenges? Okay, we didn't have capital set aside to deal with this. It was an unexpected thing, right? Can we do some analysis of that? Can we understand how frequently these things happen? Do we need to earmark some funding on the side to address data quality issues, right? Do we need to change the structure of our organization a little bit to accommodate these situations, right? But I think how every organization, and this goes back to like one of the core principles of all this, every organization operates and makes decisions a little bit differently. And I don't think there's a one size fits all, but I do think fundamentally it comes down to creating opportunities for collaboration and problem solving in an environment where we are being focused not on, you know, on the real business outcomes, and then understanding what's working for the organization, and then starting to build and scale those internal systems from there is the way to go.
And it seems that's going to require alignment right all the way up to the top, because you're going to have to align between business units and areas with conflicting priorities, conflicting performance objectives. And someone has to arbitrate and say, look, you know, this is important to the entire enterprise.
Right. And again, if we apply anthropology to this, right, power asymmetry shapes truth. Right. And so like in a large company, not all disagreements are, I'm going to contradict myself a little bit here, but not all disagreements are going to be solved by evidence that I can say that this bad thing is going to happen. Right. And so that goes to your other systems that, okay, if, you know, if Timmy has all the power and he's the loudest voice in the room, right, and he, and that he's inherently going to weigh more heavily on the decision. In Timmy's performance goals, have we established that the values of working toward the greater good and rewarding collaboration are expected so that there is some incentive there? And in the structure of this collaborative process and escalation process, is there that mediation function as at whatever level in the organization needs to go into, right? Because even how you design data governance in an organization is going to be shaped by how that organization makes decisions, which is different across industries. It's different across organization types, and it's certainly different, you know, if you take a small mom and pop that's family owned, right, decision making tends to be centralized and at the top with the owner versus the large corporations that I work in, where that responsibility is distributed across and you have different levels of dynamics within there. So it is, and all this to say, it really is a social and anthropological challenge and dynamics that we need to navigate to really do this successfully, which is why I think it's such a meaty challenge, and that everything that we've thrown at it thus far really has not been effective.
Yeah. Well, effectiveness is something we've touched on again and again, and failing or not failing. And I think that's not even the right question to ask anymore. I mean, so but, yeah, I mean, it's just hard. Hard is hard, right?
Hard is hard.
We'll continue our conversation with Tony Mazzarella in our next episode, but now, John with a sonnet about how data helps us do things better.
Data Poetry Slam. Not from sheets of paper filled from blank fields to documents so replete in wisdom doth requirements so clear leap out and yield. Rich insight so fresh from top to bottom. Rather, process itself gives joyous insight that gathers around the varied concepts. We dare not focus on absolute wrong or right, but permit the capture, what might have slipped. The model aligns the rule and metric, so business friends not worry about cardinality, resolving the egregious monster semantic. So we have formed data synchronicity. Use the model to amend the journeys. Believe it is not the end, but the means. Data Poetry Slam.
These are dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Let's see if any of this sounds familiar. You need some data, you need it quickly, and you don't have any budget. Well, no problem. I can get the data quickly and cheaply, but there's just one catch. I can't vouch for its accuracy. Do you move forward? Now, in the real world, what would likely happen is that you'd tell me to get the data quickly and cheaply and make sure that it's accurate, as if by some magical executive wave of the hand. Then we all tell ourselves stories to feel better about the decision and the data. After all, it's coming from the source systems used to run the company. Surely it must be fine. And we've heard it all on the other side as well. The data just needs to be directionally correct, and the data just needs to be close, and I'll make the adjustments myself. We've gotten so used to unreliable, or at least unverifiable data, that we don't even think about it. I had a front row seat to the transition from management by intuition to management by data, but too often there's not much difference. Would we tolerate that kind of uncertainty in other areas and with other data? What if I told you I could get you a new speedometer for your car and get it installed quickly and cheaply, but it's not accurate? Would you buy it? How about a pilot flying with an altimeter that was pretty close, I think? Everything's okay until it's not. In order to make that, quote, adjustment, that intuition, you have to have some way to quantify the error, and that happens in only two ways. Either you look for it intentionally, or you stumble upon it accidentally, proactive or reactive. So between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to be proactive. Do you want to find the problems with your data, or do you want your customers to find them? That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com. The 8-Bit Consultants. Sound advice in 256 characters or less. Four times better than those 2-bit consultants. Our question, Sarah, a longtime listener, first-time caller, asks, I've tried everything to improve data discipline, but have made little progress. I think leadership just doesn't like me. That's the only thing I can think of. Is that possible?
No. Go back to basics. Root cause people drivers are love or fear. What is leadership afraid of? Is it missing their bonus? Or is it the, we just don't believe this data stuff after 30 years of failure? Find where their fear comes from, and then find some tiny victories.
The 8-Bit Consultants. If you have a question in 256 characters or less, leave a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counterthreaded is not responsible for any losses, damages, liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice.
Tony Mazzarella reframes data governance not as a static control layer, but as a dynamic system that connects technology, people, and real-world outcomes. Governance, then, must evolve into an adaptive learning system rather than remain simply a compliance exercise. At its core, it's about aligning data, behavior, and organizational purpose to drive impact, not just manage it. We'll conclude our conversation with Tony in the next episode. And be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about Tony Mazzarella, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.